Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is David Love.
And this is Lana Love.
Welcome to our show.
Today we have a special guest, Robert Vicino, who is an entrepreneur with a global history of success in manufacturing, marketing, and real estate development. Robert is the CEO of Vivo's Project, which creates underground shelters. So we thought it'd be very interesting to talk to him about this, given what's happening in the world at the moment.
Right. We often talk about the global issues and things in the world that are impacting the quality of our lives and our standard of living and how we manage our lives based on what we're seeing and in doing so without fear and without paranoia and just doing the best we can. And we often talk on the show about survival, and we talk about planning and preparedness and how that should eliminate anxiety and worry. And Robert is someone who has extensive experience in emergency preparedness, and he knows quite a bit about what's going on in the world with the global issues such as the economy and climactic change and many different things, even on the spiritual level. And we're very excited to have him on our show today to discuss the Vivo's project and emergency shelters and how we can incorporate many of these ideas into our emergency preparedness plans. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Excuse me. Hey, Lana and David. You know, with a introduction of your names as Lana and David Love, I kind of want to change my name now to Lots of Love.
Never enough love in the world, that's for sure.
Right.
So, I guess, Robert, your project is sounds like one of love. I understand that you had a vision and that you had a sense of wanting to help humanity.
You're exactly right. And if I didn't have a passion and a love for it, it wouldn't have happened. So, that said, this all started back around 1980-81.
Tell us about it.
Well, funny you should ask.
very fascinating story.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was in my young 20s or mid-20s, somewhere around there, and I had a business that was quite successful. I had over 100 employees. This is a business I had started in my garage. And I was brought up Catholic, but I skipped an awful lot of catechism, I can tell you that. When I became, a young adult, I asked myself, what is, the right religion? Is Catholicism, is Christianity, is being a Christian or whatever? And I said to myself, they're all divisive. And the truth is, I will follow whatever religion that Jesus steps down and stands in front of and says, this is the one to follow, this is the one that got it right. So that said, I don't consider myself religious because of, as I mentioned, that it is divisive. And it has become, the major division between the world for centuries, as you know. But
sure.
I do consider myself very spiritual. And when I mean spiritual, I mean not only in spirit and in touch with the universal mind and whatever you want to call it, but also a very, very big believer in God, all right? And Jesus, but I'm just saying I see them as one and the same. So anyways, that said, I wasn't really, religious. I hadn't read the Bible at that age, and nor was I attuned to any alternative media, which I'm not even sure if it existed in early 80s. And all of a sudden, I just got this huge inspiration. To tell you the truth, I don't remember the exact moment, but I remember what the message was. And that was that I needed to build a shelter for several thousand people on Earth to survive what's coming. What's coming our way. And that was the key. It's coming. It's not just coming. It's coming our way, which means it's probably out there somewhere and headed towards us. And I did not know about Nibiru. I did not know about Planet X. I did not know who the Mayans were. You know, typical mid-20s, you know, smart at whatever my business was, but beyond that, I didn't have an awful lot of, I guess, awareness. And anyway, so that message was so powerful that I actually took time out of my business. And I live in Southern California in the San Diego area, and we have a mountain range to the east of us, and there are known to be some gold mines up there. So I, you know, got in my car and drove up to these hills at about 8,000 foot altitude, and started looking around for a cave that could possibly be hardened and retrofitted to accommodate, you know, 1,000 plus people. And I shared that with friends and family, and they thought I was crazy. And they said, what are you wasting your time on this for? And the more I thought about it, the more I realized I did not have the means or the resources or the know-how to do it. But right. I did have the inspiration. So for some reason, I was inspired, or that inspiration was vested in me, the task to do this. And so I tucked it away, and, oh, I don't know, 3-4 years later, I mentioned it to another associate, and he, too, thought I was crazy. So I tucked it away again, and it seems like over the last 30 years, I pulled it out every 3 or 4 years and would just talk about it. And, you know, the not only the idea, but the mission. And without really still not yet knowing what, when, or where, you know, that this is going to be needed. And every time I talked about it, I did have a sense that I still had time and that I didn't need to rush. And that was the case up until around 2007 when I mentioned it to, this was a following business that I had recently, and to some of my associates, and they said, wow, Robert, it's time. You need to do this, and you need to do it now. Do you know what's going on in the world? And so, you know,
that was a change, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
That was a change, wasn't it? So for once, people listened to you.
Well, yes, they were perhaps a little more tuned in, or perhaps the world is ready to hear it, you know? You know, perhaps 30 years ago, I was ahead of my time, and also ahead of my ability. So let me explain what happened over 30 years. That, you know, I was in a advertising business, and, you know, it seems like a past life now, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you what it was. I invented the medium of giant product replicas, inflatable, these big 20 and 30 feet tall soda cans, product replicas, Ronald McDonald's,
okay,
those kind of things. And in 1983, I put a 90-foot tall, that's 9 stories tall, King Kong replica on top of the Empire State Building. It was a monumental task. And it was so monumental that the press conference I had on the day that he was officially to be up, which was April 3rd, 2003, and the reason for that date was that was his 50th celluloid birthday. The original movie came out in 1933. And wow. So that's why we chose the date. Anyways, so we're up there and we had a lot of troubles. I had 200 different news agencies in the base on the ground floor of the Empire State Building in this in a news conference. And they all wanted to know, are you going to be able to do this? Are you going to be able to make it happen? And you know, I was standing next to the then owner of the building, who was Harry Helmsley, one of the wealthiest men in the world, you know, when he was still around. And, you know, and I said, look, we've only just begun. It's taken 50 years to come this far. We'll make it happen. So from that date forward, and it took about another week because we had some terrible blizzards and super high winds up there. We were really you know, stuck in our tracks there. In fact, I would say, and I remember saying to somebody, that I couldn't go forward and I couldn't go backwards. I mean, there was many times where I wish I didn't attempt to do what we did there, and because it was treacherous. And I said, you know what it's parallel to? Being in the middle of the ocean in a small sailboat in the middle of a hurricane, and you have no choice but to go forward.
Right.
And that's exactly what I had. So I did. I gathered the strength, and we did, and we finally succeeded, and we got him up. And it was a week-long series of headlines, and at the end of the final surmounting it, the New York Times ran a story on the front page, and they said they've never, ever run a publicity stunt on the front page of their paper, but this one was too good, they couldn't resist. And likewise, it was all over the world. In fact, I know you're in Australia, so you're part of the the Royal UK. How do you refer to your relationship with the royalty of the United Kingdom? Can you just insert that for me?
The Queen.
Yeah, but yes. I mean that. But you are a part of the anarchy.
The Corgi Brigade.
Okay, whatever. So anyway, so I was. We then sent this giant King Kong around the world. And he appeared in many places, kind of like a rock star. And we sent him to London, and he stood next to the London Arch for some ceremony of a hotel that was opening up, some historic thing, and they had him standing next to it. And the London Times called me back in, again, this was mid-1983, and they said, hello, could you give us a quote? And I said, sure. Tell the Queen the real king is coming. And, of course, that's King Kong. So, anyway, so we had fun with it. But what I'm saying and what I started off by telling that story is not that it was as a brag. It really isn't, looking back. It made Time Magazine Year in Review in 2003 as one of the events of the year, which I thought was pretty astounding. Full-page photograph of it. But the reason I'm bringing it up is, other than that, I didn't have any skill. I didn't have any ability. You know, I mean, I created that business, and I was really good at it. But beyond that, I had no idea how to build shelters. I had no idea how to finance them, how to promote them, et cetera, et cetera. But what then happened is, I got into the real estate industry, I became a developer, and I became an expert in what's known as fractional ownership. What that means is where, let's say there was a house on the beach and it's worth a few million dollars, and I would set it up, outfit it, furnish it, make it a turnkey, livable, beautiful home, and then sell it to as many as 8 different families, and each family uses it. One family at a time, but anytime they want. Not a timeshare, but co-ownership, and it's technically called fractional ownership. And so, in a sense, I had to learn how to do that, and here's why. Because what we're doing with our shelters today is fractional ownership. It's where we decide how many people are going to be able to comfortably live in a particular shelter. And it could be 80, it could be 200, it could be 1,000. And then we take the cost of that shelter and we divide it by that number, and that tells us how much we must sell it for in order to break even. And so, you know, a larger shelter has more economies of scale than a smaller one. And each one of those 80 people, in the instance I'm suggesting, end up becoming co-owners. They have an equal, undivided right of ownership, kind of like a country club. If you had a private country club with 100 members, and only those 100 members can golf on the course, and they all have a 1/100th interest that could go up in value or down in value over time. Anyways, so by using this model, I was able to figure out how to make these shelters come to fruition, and in time for what I think is just ahead here. So, right. You know, everything has its time, as you know, if you want to speak metaphysically. And it's amazing, I'm amazing myself, that it took 30 years for me to be ready to do what I've just done. So hopefully the universe did not make a mistake with me.
Robert, I want to congratulate you for what you've done. It sounds like you've got a gorilla of a passion and motivation.
You know, it's certainly, things always seem to take a lot longer than what we realize in life. And our plans, you really have to have a conviction, and you really have to have this sort of motivation to forge ahead in the face of adversity and getting these projects done and bringing our visions into fruition. And you're certainly doing that. And luckily, you know, we have a lot of, although we don't know how to do everything and we can learn the things that we need to do, we have a lot of talented people around us. We're surrounded by talented, resourceful, knowledgeable people who can help us with our visions if they're in alignment and resonate with what we're doing. And we certainly have that within our network. And I know a lot of the survivalists and spiritual people and activists in our network can certainly relate to a lot of what you're saying. And so you're building underground emergency shelters based on what I call the paradigm shift. Nibiru, global warfare, fragile economy, global economy, climactic change, all of these things that we're facing, which I think a lot of people, and I've heard them say, we're facing, the odds are almost seem like they're stacked against us. These are very interesting times that we're in. Amazing times, really.
Well, we're
a lot of opportunity.
We're realizing prophecy, in our time. You know, many prophets, from those that wrote the Bible to Nostradamus, Edgar Cayce in modern times, Mother Shipton, the Secrets of Fatima, so the Fatima sisters, and so on. And there's many, many more have all predicted this. But the biggest evidence I think we have is what was carved in stone 3,600 years ago in the Sumerian culture. They carved the presence of another planetary type body, namely Nibiru or Planet X, and they went through it. They experienced it. There's many believe that that's what happened and caused the Noah flood. There are others who believe that's what caused Atlantis to have sunk. And it's a cyclical thing. And the reason is it comes around reportedly every 3,600 years. And so it's just coming around again. And it will again and again and again. Until it maybe eventually, you know, collides with something. But for now, it's not going to collide, but it is going to affect, and it's going to have a major effect on this planet and our people. So I have no specific evidence of that. I haven't seen it. I don't have a telescope. But I do believe, and in looking at the evidence that I see out there, it does exist, and it is heading our way. So it's only a question of when, not if. And then the question is, I've coined a term here, time will tell, but will you have time?
Yeah,
so those that haven't prepared, once it becomes common knowledge, they can look up and see it, or the government must announce it and disclose it to us, which, by the way, I think they know now, and I can get into that for you. Then it's going to be, society's going to break down, and we're going to have a complete collapse. It'll be total chaos.
We've got a problem with the sound there.
Oh, there we go. We're okay. Yep. You know, interesting. I mean, I'm an investigator. I worked in the court system, and I believe in evidence. I believe, seeing is believing. However, the other side of that is that just because you don't see it doesn't mean it isn't there, and there's a lot that we don't know, so we have to be open-minded. And I believe we had Dr. Dweej Bing on our show once who said we should prepare for any emergency. We should just simply be aware and prepared and plan. And I think that's a good policy, and certainly there are, you know, I don't believe that the universe operates on clocks and calendars, but certainly there is a lot of truth to many of these things, and certainly with Planet X, there's evidence there for that. And
Perhaps we should spend a little bit of time just telling our audience about the evidence that is there. I think that's important.
Lana, I'd like to jump in and just respond to David's comment about prepare. You know, a lot of people think that if you're a prepper or if you're preparing for something like this, that you are crazy. And yet, I can tell you that the U.S. government, the Russian government, the Chinese government, for certain, have built huge underground shelters for thousands of
Yes, they are planning and they are prepared.
Oh, they've already built it. They're done. The Denver Airport, Northern Arizona, Taos, New Mexico, et cetera, et cetera. These shelters exist. We have verification of them. But anyways, you got to ask yourself why. Why did they build huge underground, massive shelters? Was it for World War III, or is it something bigger and worse that they're going to have a longer gestation time?
It is good to ask that question, why? And they are prepared, and most of us are not. That's concerning.
The other thing that's concerning is why the U.S. government has bought so many disposable coffins, millions of them.
Well, and bullets and meals ready to eat. And I mean, the list goes on and on, and people just ignore the fact that you just said, Lana. They ignore it. Okay, well, so what? The government does its thing. But I'm telling you, they're fully stocked, they're fully prepared, and they're fully ready. And yet, they're not going to tell us, because the minute they do, we're going to have a social collapse worldwide. So they won't tell you.
People will panic, and they don't want that.
Which we don't want that either. We don't want people panicking.
They're doing the right thing, frankly. They're being good human custodians, or custodians of Earth, to make sure that we keep the peace as long as we possibly can until it's too late. And then you're going to see martial law kick in as things start to unwind.
I mean, were you to come out and say, you're about to die to everyone on the planet, we would have this catastrophe much sooner than we actually will, I think, with anarchy. What would actually happen. I think if people realized, that fact.
The argument would go that people have the right to know.
Very true.
And the government, if they know about Planet X and Nibiru, has not got the right not to tell people, because people need to get away at least from the sea to avoid tsunamis.
True, but
and people have the right to get ready.
But they don't. Yeah. But that knowledge is there. That information is there.
Actually, NASA is denying the existence of Planet X or Nibiru.
Let me address those two things.
A very strange death.
But there are also many scientists and geophysicists and astronomers and who are saying this is all true as well. Very intelligent people with academically, credentialed, who are stating the facts as well. And the information is out there. Many of us choose to ignore what is true. So,
okay, guys, can I interrupt
sure.
and say the government doesn't tell us everything. You've heard of top secret or security clearances and so on. It's because we don't need to know, or we wouldn't know what to do with the information. And so, you'd have total hell on earth if that information was leaked. And I'm going to go even deeper with you in a minute, but I want to kind of keep up with your comments. And so as far as preparation, don't listen to what they do. Watch what they do, and they have done it. Forget what they say, watch what they do. And so they have done it, and the Russians have, and the Chinese have, and the Chinese have actually built large ghost cities 100 kilometers inland. And, for what? Because they needed to spend money and keep people working? Or they, wanted to have a nice town for the ghosts to run around? I don't know. But
that's right. It's bizarre when you see these ghost cities. They are huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they know something's coming that perhaps is going to change the coastline. Maybe Beijing is going to be wiped, and they're going to have to move inland, or just earth changes in general. So prepare. But David, you mentioned something about people don't want to believe because they haven't seen it. They haven't seen enough proof. Well, that's funny, because how many people on the planet believe in God or believe in Jesus? Have you ever seen him? No. And you can't see him, and you won't until maybe, the second coming. But the point is, there are some things you have to feel in your gut, and you have to just believe. Love is like that. And so in this case, people have the right and the ability to go out and seek that information and then form their own conclusion, connect the dots.
Right.
And it will be dots, because there is no absolute proof. If there was, the government wouldn't have to suppress, keep it a secret. It would already be out there if it was absolute proof. But here is the closest thing to absolute proof for your listeners. Are you ready? In 1983, January, the NASA announced that they found Planet X. They put up a satellite called the IRAS, IRIS, which stands for infrared, I'm not sure what the A is, acoustical satellite or something. And that satellite was put up to search for Planet X, and they found it, and they announced it. And it was on the front page of U.S. News and World Report. It was in major newspapers around the world. And they forecasted that it was coming, and it was going to be here in 50 or so years. And if you want to go on Google, you could search that. Planet X, January, 30th, 1983. And U.S. News and World Report. But guess what happened? Ronald Reagan was president at the time, and he said, wait a minute. We can't release this information. It's going to create chaos on Earth the closer we get to the D-date. And so he wrote an executive order that made it illegal, I guess, for any government agency to ever acknowledge it or mention it again. So the fact that NASA's not telling you today is meaningless. They told us before. And that's so much so that it was published.
The information is available, and we have to recognize that. And I think it's important that we take responsibility for ourselves and not give our responsibility for our safety and security over to our leaders, because our leaders don't always make the best decisions for us. Often people make the best decisions for themselves and their loved ones. So
there is, though, a feeling. A lot of people think that very soon they will be acknowledging it. Well, they can't not, because very soon we'll actually be seeing the thing. So many people have taken photos which have shown two suns, at sunset and sunrise, and they say that very soon, and even now, you can actually make out Nibiru if you look very closely on the photos.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Smithsonian the other day announced that astronomers were saying that Planet X might exist. So you'll probably be hearing it very soon, and actually seeing it very soon with the naked eye.
Yeah. I mean, we know that, there are government cover-ups. I remember when I was on, and I've said this before, I was on Alexandra Meter's radio show Galactic Connection many years ago, when I was talking about conspiracy theories. And she stopped me and she said, David, I want to say one thing. There is a conspiracy. And I would say about this, there isn't something coming. There isn't something about to happen. It's actually happening. The shift, we are now in this shift. All of these things are now happening. And so we need to just accept this. I believe that this is a big change. It could create a lot of good in the end. Hopefully the shift will also change us within and change our world. But survival is certainly the prime directive. You have to survive in order to play in the game of life, as I like to call it. So you can't be eliminated. So in order to create, we like to talk about self-sustainable living, and that's we're working on developing self-sustainable living communities, but survivalism has to come first in order for us to, you know, enact a lot of these great ideas that we have about eco villages and all of these self-sustaining living ideas that we have available to us, and all of these talented people with all of these great plans, a lot of people that we work with, these groups that we work with on these things.
So let's talk about what change has happened already. We know that our the politics, the threat of war, that's already happening. We know that the pole shift has already started to happen. There's very, very good evidence that our Earth has already tilted. We've got really weird, weird weather. The sun seems to be rising and setting in somewhat different positions, and the Eskimos, who are experts at that, have noticed that very much. They notice that the sun rises and falls in completely different places when they go out to hunt. The moon seems to be in the wrong place. It looks different. The horizons look different. And what we are expecting to happen is that this will be happening more and more. Planet X Nibiru is huge. It's massive. It's said to be, I think, 4 times bigger than Jupiter and 10 times greater in mass than Earth. It's really good that Planet X isn't going to collide with Earth, but unfortunately the gravitational pull is such that it's going to be creating a pole shift in Earth. What a pole shift means is that where the North Pole is and the South Pole is going to change. And we're already feeling the wobble, we're already feeling the effects of all of this, we're already having very unusual storms, very unusual weather changes from sunny days to storms in a matter of hours.
Yeah, and we're seeing escalated emotions, global conflict, social upheaval, I think much more than I have ever seen in my lifetime, and I've seen things in the past year that I have never seen in my 40 years, such as selling arms to our enemies' enemies, and I say that with a tongue-in-cheek. A lot of things happening that I'm very surprised to see.
Back to Earth changes, we're seeing earthquakes that are significant every day.
Increasing in magnitude and in number.
Nepal has had 34 different quakes, if you include aftershocks, but a lot of those have been very, very significant. In terms of the continents and tectonic plates, they're predicting that the Indian plate will be going under and is already under the Himalayas completely, and that India will become submerged. They're predicting that all of these, that earthquakes are just going to increase in number and volcanoes are going to increase in number. And already, I've never seen so much activity.
And in saying all of this, let's just stop for a minute and just find our center of power and our balance, because we want to face these things without fear, because fear keeps us from having clarity. It keeps us from making good decisions.
That's right.
And fear is simply a feeling. Fear is empty. Fear is something within ourselves. It's not in the world. Even fear of death is not in the world. And it's just our perception. And we need to rise up to these challenges, this challenge that we're facing, and just face it head on, just like you would in animal rights activism when you see animals being abused. Yes, it's a terrible thing, and we can become absorbed into it and emotionally based with it. But we have to keep our heads about us and act with confidence.
That's right. So it's important to observe what's happening.
Right.
Know what's very likely to happen. Stay centered. Make good decisions.
And anything
and
that...
And never, never to lose your sense of humor.
That's for sure. Yeah, life is hard, but it's not that serious.
Let me coin a phrase here. Convert your fear into awareness.
Yes, awareness, exactly. Awareness is much more useful than fear.
Okay, I think we need to take a break now. And then when we come back, Robert, we'd love you to tell us all about your shelters.
Yes, and I also just want to mention, can you give us your website so that people can look them up, look up your website on the break?
I can. First of all, let me just say the company is Vivos, V-I-V-O-S. All right? It means to live or the living in Latin. And if you just search that on Google and the word shelters, you'll find it. But here's the actual web address. It's Terra, like an earth, T-E-R-R-A, Vivos, V-I-V-O-S.com. All one word, TerraVivos.com.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Fantastic. We'll be back.
All right.
Welcome back to Universal Soul Love. This is David Love.
Lana Love. And we're talking with Robert of Casino of Vicino, sorry, of the Vivos project, which is which manufactures underground shelters. And his website is www.terravivos.com. Robert, lovely to have you on the show.
Yep. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks again. Thanks for having me. You know,
can you tell us about your shelters, what they involve, how long it took to build, and the community that you envisage will be in these shelters?
Absolutely. First of all, let me just say this. Your primary theme to your shows is sustainability, and you talk a lot about that. But in order to sustain, you have to first survive.
So good point.
So yes.
Before we look to the other side, let's look to surviving to be one of those that will have the privilege of being on the other side to do whatever we can do to reshape and reform life on the planet, if indeed this stuff happens. So, that said, let me tell you what we've got. We're building a network of deep underground nuclear blast-proof shelters that can withstand a 20-megaton blast within 5 miles and come out unscathed. These are concrete and steel, deep underground. They're outfitted like 4-star hotels, not 5-star. They're not that luxurious, but they're designed to be as comfortable as possible because they're intended to accommodate the prescribed number of people that co-own each shelter for a minimum of 1 year. Without returning to the surface, okay? That's a very long time. And what does it take to make that happen? Well, let me give you an abstract. Imagine having 80 people come to your house and go down into your basement, and you have had to provide and plan all the provisions that they're going to need to survive in your basement for a year. Just imagine that undertaking. So it's everything from starting with the security of the shelter, the strength of the shelter, so it survives all of these risks, a pole shift, major earthquakes, everything that can come our way, to nuclear, biological, and chemical air filtration systems, so we scrub all the air coming in, to security devices on the inside, on the outside, our own power station. We got 200-kilowatt generators typically. Fuel, 30,000 gallons of diesel fuel, typically, underground, buried underground, deep water wells, so we're pulling water from very down, far down in the earth, and so we're completely sustaining, for a minimum of a year. We also have gardens and hydroponics, so we're growing food within, so everybody gets fresh leafy vegetables every day. We also have freeze-dried food and canned meats and a variety of grains so that each person is guaranteed 2,500 calories per day for that entire period. And then, of course, there's soaps and toiletries and paper and you name it.
All the very impressive modern living. I guess it's important to have those comforts there because it could become quite tense underground with 80 people there. You'd have to have some way of relieving stress, relieving tensions that occur between people. You know, they're stuck down under the whole.
Exactly. So we give them as much space as possible. We have a rule of thumb, and that is, we have to provide a minimum of 125 square feet per person. All right, now that's collectively. So if you took the shelter let's say it was 12,500 feet, divided it by the that number of 125, and that would tell you how many people that size shelter could accommodate. In that case, it would be 100. And so we're not squeezing people in. We're giving them room to move around to the theater, to the exercise area, to the kennels, to the garden, to the kitchen, wherever in the facility. And then they're, of course, their own private bedroom suite with top-of-the-line mattresses and all that kind of stuff. Again, we want them to be as comfortable for the duration. And then, of course, they have each other. And so we handpick the people to be like-minded and with a diversity of skills. So we have surgeons, nurses, doctors of all types, security people, military and active duty police. We have mechanics, we have plumbers, we have electricians, basically everything we're going to possibly need down there. And just like Noah's Ark, I guess we have two of everything, because we're not going to rely on one doctor or one security guy. So so the planning and logistics that go into the making of these things is unbelievable.
I must say I'm very impressed about the amount of thought that's gone into this.
Well thought out.
Very well. You know, if something is going to succeed, this would definitely succeed. Yeah. And I guess you're like the modern Noah's Ark, aren't you, Robert?
Well, yeah, we try not to refer to it because in the media, as soon as you start to get religious, you're going to start getting a certain bent to a story. But, you know, in effect, that's what we are. And it's a trite
term. I guess I can't help thinking about the animals and whether you are going to think about taking a few animals along in case they die out.
Well, people are allowed to bring their pets, household pets. I've had some say, I want to bring a goat and so on and so on. And we said, sorry, we don't have that accommodation. But let me say, and I'm not going to spill the beans on your show, but I'm going to tease you a little bit. We are putting together a DNA ARC that will be co-located on two continents in the U.S. and in Europe, and we hope to store the DNA of millions, and I would say hopefully a billion people on the planet. Now that's one in seven. That's a really big monumental task, but guess what? We think we're going to be able to achieve it, given enough time. And what is the DNA? It's life. Five drops of blood stored properly will be stored indefinitely for 100 plus years, and in these deep underground vaults that are conditioned and dry and so on. But that's enough to restore you, to clone you or your organs or your bring you back. You could say, gee, that's kind of, you know, eugenics, but it's not designer DNA, it's everyone's DNA. We don't care who you are, what your color, race, and creed is. It's to create a gene pool for the other side. If indeed this stuff happens, we may need that. For example, what if we all survive, but our DNA is destroyed by radiation or some cosmic ray, and so we can't reproduce? We're alive, but we can't reproduce anymore, and we start to age very quickly, and that's what happens with DNA when it gets destroyed. So what we're doing is really an epic project, and there are many that believe that's what Noah's Ark was. It was a DNA ark. It was not 2x2.
Now, Robert, I'd like you to tell our listeners what they can do if they're interested. The other thing I wanted to focus on is I believe you have one of these in America and in Europe, but not in Australia. And of course, we're down under, and Australia would be a very... I know that a lot of people are actually leaving Europe and America to go to Australia because we're such a politically reasonably safe place and far away. And David and I are wanting to build one of these bunkers, and we need to get 80 or 100 people together. And that's certainly something we're going to be promoting. Robert, could you tell people how they get in touch with you if they're interested?
Let me cover all those bases. They can go to terravivos.com and click on Apply Here once they watch the homepage video and so on. And when they click on Apply Here, it'll take them to a price page and then ultimately to an application. And what we like people to do is fill out an application so we know a few basics about you, nothing too personal. And that allows us or helps us know who we're dealing with. And I can tell you, currently we have several hundred applications from Australia. The problem we have is that, and worldwide, we probably have 50,000 people that have applied to get into Viva. The problem is that a very, very small fraction can actually afford it. And so we've done everything we could think of, including coming up with a do-it-yourself shelter that we can ship anywhere in the world. It's very low cost, but you got to have some construction skills to put it together or get your local friends to help you. We also have a shelter that's completely turnkey that's a private. It's called a Quantum Shelter, and we can ship that anywhere in the world. And so it would be for your family of 2, 4, up to 8, but you can connect them with corridors and modules that you can infinitely grow it, so it could be 100 people. And yes, we would love to build a community shelter co-owned in Australia. We've located the spots that we believe are the better locations to put it, but we just don't have enough people at this time ready, willing, and able to proceed. So if you can help facilitate that, we will make it, we will manifest it.
Well, absolutely. We're definitely going to go ahead with that. Is it worthwhile mentioning the amount that it will cost?
Well, every shelter is different, but it typically will vary from $25,000 to $50,000 per person in one of our community shelters. And let me tell you, that's the Indiana shelter we have, which is, still has some space. So if people want an immediate solution, we have space in Indiana. They just got to go and get there. But that shelter is a $25 million replacement value. And it's an 80 people at $50,000 apiece, which is the high end of the price range, does not pay for $25 million worth of shelter. So what we did there is we bought a former government facility from the Cold War, and we went in and retrofitted it. And all we needed to know is that the concrete and the shell was in perfect condition and still as strong as the day it was built, and it was. And we then gutted it and retrofitted it and outfitted it, and it's standing there. It's been standing ready to go for the last 3 years. The doors are closed and sealed, and it's climatically controlled and under security surveillance at all times and ready to be activated. So if something were to happen tonight, we're activating it.
Excellent. I just want to say that I think an emergency shelter is an important part of any survival plan, and certainly a part of any, it should be a part of a self-sustainable living community, I believe, so that people have a place to go in the event of an emergency. And I just want to add that, you know, we are co-creators of the universe. We are divine beings. We do manifest our own reality. The possibilities are unlimited, and we still can create all the good in the world, and we should focus on positive solutions rather than dwelling on the problem. And this is, I believe, what we're talking about, emergency preparedness and planning,
this is such
a positive
idea.
Solution.
That's right. And I think you have to consider, what is your life worth? How much would you pay to be safe and for your family to be safe? I think, Robert, I'm astounded at how much has been put into this, how much thought has been put into this. And in terms of the price, I think it's very reasonable given how much real estate help would cost, and how much food would cost, and how much, you know, making sure that you can be safe would cost.
Okay. And we're talented, resourceful people, and we work with a lot of leaders of large organizations who are activists and who are working towards the same shared vision. So just want to thank you, Robert, for coming on our show today. We've got about 45 seconds left. So
thank you very much, Robert. And so people can write to you if they're interested. People are also welcome to contact me and David if you want to join our shelter in Australia. And we'll be continuing to advertise that in the weeks to come. Yeah. So what a wonderful show. Thank you so much, Robert. I'm feeling
inspired.
Very inspired, yeah.
Well, that's right. Don't feel afraid. Feel inspired and take advantage of the news and the information you've got and deal with it. Act upon it.
Great. And thanks so much. We have we're still planning on having Sasha Stone on our show from the New Earth Nation on a future episode. We've done some work with Arielle Ford, and we've heard that we're looking for good things from her and a lot of other upcoming guests. So thank you for listening in.
And we'll catch you next week on Universal Soul Love.
Bye, everyone.